This is the Drive and Dish Podcast. Talking about NBA news, stats, and fantasy. To start it off, it's Tim Tompkins.
The counterbalance to the death lineup isn't putting Durant at the four. It's putting Robertson at the four, which the entire time I've been railing on Robertson, I've been saying it's because he's not a shooting guard.
Kevin Rayfuse.
Good, but I don't want to be stuck in the limbo of mediocrity. I don't want to gamble that maybe one day there's a Harden trade out there. I don't want to gamble that some team is going to be stupid and let a Steve Nash walk out the door and go to Phoenix the way Dallas did, where you stumble upon a superstar.
And Justin Kuzart.
When you're taking away driving lanes from LeBron James, that's LeBron's thing, is he's just a beast and he gets in there and Bogut's down there saying no and causing some problems and at least just getting in the way, which usually helps.
Well, if you like that, you're gonna love this.
Well, if anything, this is the point where we all sit there and get real excited.
Let's do this!
Let's go.
So usually we hit you with an intro, but the NBA, let's just say it's been a little active since the last time we talked to you guys at the end of the finals. We've got a whole lot to break down between the draft, between trades, and everything in between. Free agency is coming up in just a few days here, so let's not waste any time. You're listening to the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. My name is Kevin Rayfuse. Joining me to my left, my co-host, Tim Tompkins.
Ball don't lie.
And behind the boards, keeping us honest as always, our producer, Justin Kuzart.
Lord, give me strength.
Oh, poor Boogie, dude. I hashtag tweeted from our account, free Boogie, after that tweet went out. Like, I don't think there's anyone on earth who hates the Sacramento Kings more than DeMarcus Cousins.
Well, the Sacramento Kings now have 5 centers.
No, I thought the Sixers had a lot of centers.
Right, which is really necessary when you have arguably the best center in the league.
You know, what was he, second All-NBA team this year, arguably first?
Right, almost 30 points a game, double-digit rebounds, couple of steals,
but
block.
But it's like, why are you guys
really great center
getting more centers?
I mean, that's like if the Warriors just stayed drafting point guards or something.
Be like, yo, or the Sixers drafted another center this year.
Right. The difference is that these are proven quantities, whereas the Sixers, it's still kind of up in the air whether or not how good
which
they're going to
be. Which one's going to be the guy?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I guess that's fair.
I don't know. It was bad, though. I think the Sixers drafted another center. I might have been jumping off the roof a little bit.
Well, instead, they drafted another power forward, but we will get into that in the meat of the episode. I guess we should say that this is actually going to be a two-part episode.
Yeah. And we don't want to shortchange you guys and briefly glance over these topics. The draft itself was incredibly intriguing and a lot happened, and then about 5 major trades happened, and like I said, free agency is coming up. So actually, and the way we're going to structure these episodes, second one's going to drop for you guys in the middle of the week. It'll be part 2, and in part 2 we're just going to get right into it as well. This is essentially one giant episode, but we're bringing it to you on 2 different days.
So if you support the Drive and Dish podcast, the biggest thing you can do to help us out is simply by leaving us a review on iTunes. We'll give you a shout out on the show, and this week we are giving a shout out to
Justin, I'm sorry in advance, and this actually has nothing to do with you, but you'll see why in a second. The title of the review is Dishing. It's a 4-star review by Season Best here in America. Season Best says, surprised by the recent review read on the podcast in which the reviewer perceives Tim to be the annoying one in the group. It's clear to me that Tim provides the most knowledgeable opinions on the show, which probably reflects the work he puts into it, research, etc. The other two have clearly stated they wouldn't want to invest all their work energy into the podcast, even if they were paid well enough to do so. I think this approach to the podcast is evident while listening. Tim gives the show its substance.
I love when I get quoted out of context.
Because I remember having this conversation. Justin and I never said that we wouldn't podcast if the price was right. And if we were able to turn this into a full-time living. It's just the fact of the matter for me is, like, I have a job that I really like right now. I really like news. I put a lot of prep into the podcast. And, like, I take it as seriously as I take my job. Like, I think Justin and I are both that way. I would have to make enough money to give up news in order to do the podcast full time was my point. And that would be a lot because I really like news. It's not because I wouldn't want a podcast full time. It's just that I also really like news and I put a lot of work into my news career as well. And I wouldn't just want to give that up.
What I was referring to when I said that, the way I said it is I didn't want it to be my main source of income because I enjoy doing it. And once it becomes a thing that, like, I need to do this to live, I felt as if I would not enjoy doing the research as much. And so saying that I don't do any work into it because I don't want to get paid for this It's quoting me out of context. So that's all I have to say.
You guys are kind of salty on this one.
So it's not salty about it. It's just that, like, I think it downplayed a bit that the prep that Justin and I do for this show. Someone saying you having great insights is fine. Like, everybody that listens to the show is going to have a different favorite person. That's not ridiculous. Like, Tim, you got bashed the other week. Like, you deserve a great review. You know, Tim and I like to bicker and have that little bit back and forth going on the podcast. Like, Tim puts a ton of review into this pod, or I should say effort into putting prep together for this podcast. He's one of the best basketball podcasting hosts in the game. Like, you know, there's a reason we all podcast together, but I feel like it took that conversation we had with Justin, and like Justin said, I think it took it a little out of context. I think the review makes it seem like we don't take it seriously, which isn't true. That would be amazing. It'd be a dream come true for me.
Well, thank you very much for the review. I appreciate the kind words, especially after the one that said I was the most annoying person on the internet.
What a change 2 weeks makes. And that person has never hit us up who called you the most annoying person on the internet. If you're still out there, we just want to hear why.
At least knowingly hit us up.
Tell me something I do not know. Do not know.
Now. If you do not know the present, how can you claim to know the future?
Now on NBA News on the Drive and Dish podcast.
We need to know now.
All right, first in your news, the Memphis Grizzlies have claimed Tony Roten off the waivers. Roten was released by the Knicks when they acquired Derrick Rose via a trade. Roten signed with the Knicks towards the end of last season, but he did not play in any of the games. Fun fact, the Grizzlies did draft Roten in the first round in the 2012 draft. He's from Washington. The Phoenix Suns have hired Ty Corbin as their assistant coach on the staff of Earl Watson. Corbin was an assistant coach of the Utah Jazz for several seasons before becoming head coach in 2014. Corbin then became the assistant coach and interim head coach with the Kings. Watson was hired by the Suns on a permanent basis after replacing Jeff Hornacek midseason. Corbin was also a finalist for the Golden State Warriors assistant coach position. Joakim Noah says he has a specific priority in mind as he weighs his free agent options. He says he wants a chance to win it all first, then he will figure out if he will have to start and finish games. He has apparently ruled out re-signing with the Bulls. Sticking with the Bulls have been discussing a trade involving Taj Gibson with multiple teams. He is in the final season of his contract worth about $8.9 million. If they do trade away Gibson, they'll be left with a front court of Robin Lopez, Nikola Mirotic, Bobby Portis, and Cristiano Felico. Gibson is already 31. He came into the NBA around 2009. He was an older rookie then. DeMar DeRozan says he doesn't plan on scheduling meetings with any rival teams at the start of free agency. He is just going to focus on signing with the Raptors. And lastly in your news, Pau Gasol says he is willing to play for Spain in the Olympics despite concerns about the Zika virus. He stated, "My commitment to the national team is greater than my fears of what might happen." It's also been reported that Gasol called on Rio officials to ensure the safety of everyone attending the games. They begin August 5th. That's your news for this week.
Something.
For NBA lovers, you need the daily NBA Highlights newsletter. Fresh NBA content sent to your email every morning. It's completely free, no ads or spam. The NBA newsletter breaks down NBA history, top news stories for that day, in-depth player features, NBA humor, recaps from games the night before, and links to the latest NBA podcasts. Signing up is so simple. Go to dailynbahighlights.com and enter your email. That's it. Daily NBA Highlights newsletter. Being an NBA junkie just got a whole lot easier.
I guess when this trade happened, I was a bit shocked because it seemed like a really ballsy move. You have Kevin Durant, who's a free agent this year. You have a team that just pushed the arguably, or maybe not arguably, the greatest regular season team of all time to Game 7 in the Western Conference Finals, mm-hmm. trading a key piece of their core away to the Orlando Magic. And I think that they got a lot in return and probably, honestly, a bit too much, in my opinion, for Serge Ibaka. But given that Kevin Durant's about to be a free, or that Kevin Durant is a free agent, that takes balls to trade Serge Ibaka.
Well, I guess the question was this a move to, like, try to bring Durant back? Like, show him, like, hey, we're making the change. We're bringing in another player that can kind of be the next James Harden. But also, Ibaka was really good for them down low. And also, I think this shows that they want to focus more on, like, a Steven Adams and Cantor down low duo sort of thing.
And free up some cap space. I mean, Ibaka's going to cost you eventually. I mean, the fact of the matter is, really, until the playoffs Serge Ibaka kind of slipped under the radar. He didn't seem to be quite the guy for the Thunder that he had been in the past. His three-point shooting had regressed. They had Steven Adams, so his interior defense. I mean, he was playing the small ball five at times, but with Steven Adams and them going with those hyper-big lineups that Justin was talking about for a bit, his role became a little bit diminished. And obviously with the timing, it's a bit strange, like Tim mentioned, because they're Kevin Durant is a free agent. There's going to be a whole lot to talk about with that, but biggest free agent on the market since LeBron James back in 2010. You know, you're trying to get him to come back. And I mean, this is a move that you're shaking things up for the sake of making him come back. And in the case for the Thunder, I think it makes a lot of sense. I think the Thunder came out of this trade as big time winners. For Orlando, it's a lot of we'll have to see. Right now, I would think Orlando is the loser of this trade. I don't think it's quite as bad as a lot of people are making it out to be.
I kind of liked it for Orlando, to be completely honest. Like with him and Vuk down low, like that literally makes up and takes the pressure off of him having to play that defensive side that he's not that good
at. My problem with that is, I guess let's talk from it for Orlando before we talk with OKC. If we're going to talk about with Orlando, Rob Hennigan's been preaching all along that he wants a quick rebuild. He's been trying to get this Orlando team back into the playoffs for the past few years, and they've really made the efforts to do so. And I think Ibaka helps in that regard. I mean, a lot of people forget that Serge Ibaka is 26 years old, so it's not like this is a guy who is past his prime or anything. If anything, he's just entering it. He can play these small ball lineups, be your small ball center at the five position. The fear that I have is if you're not going to trade Vucevic, which it seems like they're going to trade Vucevic. I know for me, like you go out and you hire Frank Vogel, who's an extremely defensive oriented coach. Nick Vucevic is not a defensive guy by any means. But if you keep Vucevic and you let Ibaka play the four, you know, one of the gripes I had last year when the Magic re-signed Tobias Harris was that they're taking this time away from Aaron Gordon. And unless you're trying to move Aaron Gordon to the three, which I don't really understand, again, you're stunting this kid's development. Is if this kid is the future of your franchise and one of these guys that you want to build around, why do you get Ibaka to take his minutes?
Well, that and Ibaka is going to be a free agent in 2017. So Ken Berger had reported that Ibaka had given the Thunder kind of a heads up that he probably wasn't going to be re-signing. He felt like he was underutilized. He wasn't getting enough touches. And so the Thunder thought, well, if we aren't going to be able to re-sign Ibaka, go out and trade for him now. If you're Orlando and Ibaka is going to be a free agent in 2017, if you look at the crop of free agents in 2017, that there is very little rim protection in that crop of free agents.
So he's going to be highly sought after.
He's going to be very expensive to re-sign. Kevin mentioned that Ibaka is now going into his prime. Production's actually been going down the last couple of years.
Yeah.
He didn't have a good season. His rebounding numbers have gone down. Part of that obviously has to do with the fact that OKC wanted him to play around the perimeter like the Cavs are making Kevin Love do. But if you're Orlando, and Kevin mentioned this, you're taking time away from Aaron Gordon. Unless you're going to be playing a whole bunch of small ball five with Ibaka at the five and Aaron Gordon at the four, and then maybe bringing Vooch off the bench for some bench scoring, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. And I don't know why you would give up Victor Oladipo. Like, Victor Oladipo is like he's a franchise player.
The problem was him and Peyton it didn't like work, and it was obvious that's why they benched Oladipo.
Well, how much
of that
was Skiles though?
That could have been it too. I just wanted to bring you back to a second. I know Kevin, you were worried about Aaron Gordon playing the small forward. He did it about 40% this season. So I mean, it's not like he was going to be way out of his league. They've kind of, you know, tested the waters with that, and it was working because they continued to do that. But the other thing with at least Ibaka is down low, his shot percentage. It brings in a guy who's got this very good down low offense and rim protector, like we were talking about.
My whole problem with Ibaka over the last 3 or 4 years has been how much he's been relying on the pick and pop. And how he doesn't really post up like he used to. Like, he's not the same Ibaka of like 3 years ago as far as his down low scoring presence.
They might be able to bring that back. Well,
yeah, I mean, maybe that was a product of the system.
But that could also be bad if Ibaka comes out and has like a Hibbert esque season.
Like a good Hibbert or a bad Hibbert?
Good Hibbert.
Good Hibbert.
And then all of a sudden you're in free agency, like a lot of money is going to come.
Oh yeah, he's going to command a ton of money.
Well, Ibaka can be the centerpiece here. To Tim's point that I'm not sold necessarily that Oladipo was a franchise player. I was a bit surprised to see Oladipo moved. And I think you had to do something, like Justin said, with that guard situation with Elfrid Payton. Like, you need to make a decision moving forward.
No, I mean, very literal in the sense of franchise player. Like, when you go to Magic games,
You go to see Victor Oladipo.
It is Victor Oladipo on the side of the building.
Although
is,
maybe now that's Fournier's kind of starting to get that vibe.
Well, just, they re-signed
now him. They're going to put a Bach on the side of the building. I mean, I just like for example, when you go see a Phoenix Suns game, you're going to see Eric Bledsoe stuff just everywhere. Devin Booker and Eric Bledsoe, and that's what you're going to see at the arena. When you go see the Orlando Magic, you're seeing a ton of Victor Oladipo, and that's what I mean by franchise player.
The other thing with, at least for Oladipo, in the 3 years he's been in the league, his three-point percentage has gone up. And I would imagine once you go to the Thunder, where you'll have, you know, Westbrook and Durant that can also shoot the three, I'd assume that percentage would probably go even higher.
Well, and that's going to be the question, because I was going to say, let's switch gears a little bit. We've been talking about Orlando in terms of OKC with the Springs. I mean, for me, Victor Oladipo, it allows you to move on for Dion Waiters. That's the way I look at the trade, though, is Oladipo is essentially a replacement for Dion Waiters. And if you look at the raw numbers, it's really not that much of an improvement on the offense. Event. I mean, they shoot about the same percentages.
Defense, though.
Right. That's the biggest difference. That's the reason you go out and get him, is that Oladipo is an excellent perimeter defender. I do worry about the lack of spacing with Russell Westbrook. I mean, granted, Tim's going to bring up that they had Robertson, so there wasn't exactly much spacing to begin with. Seems like you want to surround Westbrook with a little more shooters, and I don't think Oladipo is that great of a three-point shooter, but the athleticism is there, and that, like I said, that perimeter defense is excellent. He definitely improves on Waiters in that regard.
My question is, would then you have Robertson off the bench?
I think you put Robertson at the four.
You put Robertson at the four,
you put Victor Oladipo at the two, Durant at the three, Russell Westbrook obviously at the one, and you start Adams, and you bring Cantor in as your guy off the bench, and then you rest Russell Westbrook, still the hardest name in the NBA to say, and you let Victor Oladipo run the offense as you're bringing along Cameron Payne in that second unit.
Well, it does bother me though. He's averaging per game. I mean, I guess it's not too bad. About his turnovers have gone down, but he's still at about 2.1 turnovers per game. Oladipo is.
He's a combo guard, shooting guard.
Yeah.
Like, I think Victor Oladipo is a fantastic player. It was two seasons ago when the Orlando Magic, where everybody was talking about Victor Oladipo, and I feel like, and I mentioned this on the podcast before, but the NBA is such a what have you done for me lately league. Mm-hmm. And Scott Skiles came in, decided to basically bench Victor Oladipo. We have forgotten how good of a player he is.
He did only play 52 games. His shot, although his points per game is still at 16 last season, the season you were talking about, he had about 18. I'll round up on that. So, like, it's not like he did worse production. And honestly, if you look at it, starting 71 games in 2014-2015 to 52 and only losing about a point per game, like, you know, his effective field goal percentage went up. You know, he's getting better. Is I guess the trend here.
And he's another threat on the floor too. I just think if you're looking at OKC and you're looking at all the bigs they have, and if Ibaka's not going to re-sign, and they've been looking for that two guard for so long. I mean, look at all these guard Waiters and Morrow, Jeremy Lamb. They just ever since that Harden trade, they haven't been able to find a wing player. And I think he's going to be so valuable. And I think that they're going to be able to rest Russell Westbrook a bit too. I think that you can play Kevin Durant and
Oladipo
together. And I think that you can run, you know, you can run some second units with Cantor and Oladipo.
The defense between Oladipo and Robertson being around the three-point line, like, that'll be really cool to see.
Yeah, I mean, you have to respect Oladipo's shot. You don't really have to respect Robertson's at all.
Yeah, yeah. I was just speaking more for the perimeter defense that would show up there, I guess.
Now, OKC also in this, they got Ersin Ilyasova. All accounts are that they're going to keep him. They also got the 11th pick.
Ilyasova off the bench wouldn't be terrible.
I mean, he's not a bad player. He's not really a starting power forward.
No, but he got that 3-point. Like, he does have that 3-point shot some games. Like, he's so hit or miss, I guess.
Yeah, depending on the lineup. I mean, I guess if you have Kevin Durant out there and you have Russell Westbrook chucking up 50 shots a game, like, does it really matter if you have Ersin out there? Like, it's not like they need to really rely on him to score. They just need to rely on him being somewhat of a threat.
Yeah, and I guess the other thing is, like, it would be able to at least have that off-the-bench threat, like you were just saying, and you can add to the numbers, because the whole problem with OKC was, like, okay, after Kevin Durant and Westbrook, like, what do you do?
Yeah,
like,
there's no one else to score.
What can you do? Yeah.
Well, so how do you guys feel about this trade? I mean, I think it's a lot of show me for Orlando. I think if Ibaka works, I think if Ibaka re-signs and kind of goes back to his form, I think you end up not giving up that much for a really elite guy. But I think it's more of a gamble with Orlando, I think even if KD leaves now, you set yourself up going forward for the future. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the other kind of shrewdness of this move by Sam Presti, is that, you know, they freed up a lot of cap space. Cantor's contract can be moved to get additional cap space if need be. If in the event that you lose KD, you can kind of adjust going forward. And that's what I liked. You know, you got it. I liked that Sam Presti, despite KD leaving, didn't back off his guns out of like fear to try to keep somebody and then kind of get caught if your guy leaves and then have to really play from behind. He really got out ahead of this and made some forward thinking moves. And I think that's going to really benefit this team going forward.
Does this show, at least for the Magic, that they are not interested in Howard? Because I know the whole like,
Dwight Howard coming back to Orlando. Howard might go the Knicks. I don't know. I don't think they're interested in if Dwight Howard does not seem like a Frank Vogel player.
Well, see, I guess if we mentioning at least just the Knicks trade there for a second, I think the Knicks are kind of interested in seeing what Porzingis can do at the center with the moves that they're doing. Because if you think about it, a Derrick Rose, Carmelo, Porzingis triangle offense, not too bad of an idea.
I think that the Knicks are going to be going really hard, and I'm glad you brought that up, Justin, because we are segueing over to the Knicks now, is that the Knicks are... they're going to be going hard after a center this offseason. And the class of free agent centers is actually pretty good. You mentioned Roy Hibbert a while ago. He's a free agent center. You got Mahimi, you got Biombo, you got Hassan Whiteside, you got Joakim Noah.
The Lakers are going to go so hard after Whiteside.
Oh, I want to talk about that a little bit.
There are a ton of free agent centers available that the Knicks can play. I think as far as Porzingis, my only real concern with this and then them getting Derrick Rose is Derrick Rose is a guy that likes the ball in his hand a lot. He likes a lot of shots.
But that works with the triangle.
Does that take away development from Porzingis? Because if you're developing Porzingis, taking away touches doesn't seem like the way to do it. But I guess from a Bulls standpoint, and we shouldn't downplay this at all, it is the end of the Derrick Rose era.
Which back when they drafted him would have been like, or back in his 2011.
He was the next Michael Jordan to Bulls fans for many years. From a Bulls fan, because I feel like we talked about this before, if it was just sort of a sigh of relief, like this chapter in our franchise is done, they've been putting up with Derrick Rose, sitting out games when he was cleared to play. You look at the Bulls GM, Foreman, he said, we felt that the championship window had come to a close. And to quote him, he said, in simple terms, our plan moving forward is that we need to get younger and more athletic. We need to find players that fit the style that Fred Hoiberg wants to play.
And that's the thing with Rose, is I think now he has to start working his game to not rely off his athletic ability. But a good thing for the Knicks fan, and this is what I've been telling everyone, is like, you know, he played 81 games, tore his ACL, only was able to play so many games in between, 39 games in 2011-2012, 10 in 2013-14, 51 in 14-15, and then this year he played 66. Like, he is slowly getting more and more, and barring a terrible injury, which I know is always a concern now, he's going to give you so many games. And hopefully if the trend continues, he can make it to like 75.
I mean, even if he plays 75 games, I still think at the end of the day, with the point guard era that we are now in the NBA, that Derrick Rose, his ceiling is going to be a run-of-the-mill point guard. I don't think that this is the worst deal for the Knicks ever. It's basically it's a one-year rental on him.
Right.
It's just they had to give up Lopez, and Lopez is replaceable, but Lopez is a really solid player.
And that's why I think them wanting Porzingis at the center might be why they moved Lopez, because then they would clash with his
And you know, that's possible. I think he can get away with it in some lineups, but you know, they gave up their first round pick from last year too. I mean, the Knicks just stay giving away their draft picks.
I guess looking at it though, the Knicks point guard situation was so bad last year.
They needed to get rid of Calderon, so I mean, that's good.
Like, having Rose is a huge step up compared to what they had.
It's a textbook gamble. It's a textbook low risk, high reward. I mean, at the end of the day, realistically, the biggest piece you gave up in this trade is Robin Lopez. And Robin Lopez is a really good NBA center who put in a lot of minutes for them last year, and who I think has actually been pretty underrated the last few years. But realistically, this Knicks team is not going to win anything right now, so you have to gamble sometimes. And like Tim said, I think this is a one-year rental. If it totally fails, if God forbid Derrick Rose gets hurt again, then you move on. You bite the bullet, you move on, and I don't think you're going to deeply regret the loss of Robin Lopez and Jerrion Grant enough to justify not pulling the trigger on this option. Like, I think Knicks fans have every right to be worried. I mean, who wouldn't worry with all the things that Derrick Rose has gone through the past few years? I think some good signs is that he played 66 games last year. I thought he played a lot of great minutes for the Bulls in the second half of the season. And I don't think, like Justin said, I don't think he's never going to be MVP Derrick Rose again. He's never going to have that athleticism, that quick burst that just made him so difficult to guard. But, you know, I like it. I like this move for the Knicks. I like going out and shaking things up a bit, and I like that if he becomes half the Derrick Rose he used to be, this trade is instantly worth it in my eyes. And you could re-sign him.
I had two thoughts on what you were saying, and I forgot one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So now I only have one thought.
Okay.
I think this is also on the Bulls' side. Getting Lopez was a move just in case Paul Gasol leaves.
Well, I think Joakim Noah is for sure gone now,
yeah.
too.
Joakim, I've already assumed he's gone.
Well, no,
yeah.
He said as much as he's gone. He said in the papers.
I felt like it was... That's also... So you have to look at from, you know, from the Bulls' perspective is they aren't just moving on from Derrick Rose. They're moving on from Noah. Joakim Noah as well.
That, like, era. Like, right. Joakim Noah, Derrick Rose...
Right.
Who was a Boozer? Mm-hmm. You know, like, all those guys. They kind of are moving from that now.
Like, I don't hate it for the Knicks, and I don't love it either. Like, I think that, you know, if you have Carmelo, like Kevin said, you got to gamble a little bit. Mm-hmm. You got to try. Your point guard situation was awful. You weren't winning anyway. At the end of the day, Lopez, Jerrion Grant, they're good players, but they're by all means replaceable.
Yeah.
It's not the end of the world. It also looks like there's some mutual interest from Jamal Crawford, too, with joining the Knicks, and they could be a really fun team. The big question that the Knicks are going to go into this summer...
God damn it.
Derek Williams opted out of his contract.
Yeah.
And signs are that the Knicks want to re-sign him. It just depends on how much money he's going to command in free agency. And you have a really athletic player in Derek Williams as a Knicks fan and a Knicks organization. That should be your number one priority now that you've got your core set between Porzingis, Rose, and Carmelo Anthony is re-signing Derek Williams.
I know Knicks fans do want him back. He's only 25 years old. Actually, fun fact, born like 3 days after me.
Mm.
So,
nice.
You know, little side thought there. But, you know, he did have a really, like, quietly good year. There were a few games where I remember Tim would be like, oh my God, he had like 26 points last night. He was playing about 17 minutes per game, almost 10 points a game. Like,
I hate his jump shot. I can't stand it.
Why is that?
He kicks his feet out when he jumps up.
Ugh.
And it's just, it doesn't look good. So he's always landing in a different spot. It's not a clean jump shot by any stretch of the imagination. And I just...
He'd be a great backup.
And that's what he is.
Yeah.
You know, he's energy off the bench. And I think that every team needs that. In all seriousness, though, Jeff Hornacek, not only is he going to this huge media market where he has to deal with Carmelo and he has to deal with developing Porzingis and he has to deal with trying to re-sign Derek Williams and he has to deal with the media, he now also has to deal with a bit of a diva point guard. And well, you're talking about, like, New York media, New York fans. They aren't as kind as those Chicago Bulls fans were.
I don't know, man. They can be... I mean, granted, Derrick Rose had the hometown thing going for him. I think Chicago fans, when it comes to Derrick Rose, I mean, and this is just what I've been able to gauge so far. Chicago fans, you tweet us at Drivin' NBA because I want to hear what you guys are feeling about this. But it seems like Chicago fans, they're not really mad at Derrick Rose. It's pretty tough to be mad when a guy just gets hurt. It just sucks. It's one of those things where, I mean, this is a guy who is the MVP of the league at 22 years old.
But to Tim's point, I was looking at my time hop this morning, and I tweeted out a link on my personal Twitter of... Black Knicks fans reacting to the Knicks drafting a lanky white center from Europe. And that just kind of gives you...
That New York media. Okay, so Jeff Hornacek was the coach of the Phoenix Suns for three years or something. He was the coach of the New York Knicks for roughly a day and a half before...
They made more puns about his name than the Suns ever did.
it's a different media market. Yeah. The Garden is a different...
Which is a side note why I don't think Howard would do okay there.
No.
So I also at the same time kind of want him to go just because that would be a really Knicks thing to happen.
Yeah, sure. I mean, they'd be a great title contender in 2011.
Calling all geek and game nerds out there, I want to let you know about our sponsor, Loot Crate. What Loot Crate is it's a monthly subscription service where each month you get a different themed box that arrives at your doorstep. And the thing about this box that's really cool is it's all exclusive. You can't get this stuff anywhere else. It's going to come with a t-shirt. It's going to come with comic books. It's going to come with little figurines. Really cool stuff. And this month's theme for Loot Crate is futuristic. So it's going to have stuff from Rick and Morty, Futurama, Star Trek, Mega Man, Valiant Comics, and Star Trek. And like I said, it includes a model, a figurine, and a t-shirt. And you can help support the Drive and Dish and get a few bucks off, $3 off your monthly subscription, to be exact, by going to lootcrate.com/driveanddish and putting in the code Drive and Dish. Or if you forget, you can just go to our website, driveanddishpodcast.com. There's a sponsors link at the top of the tab. And again, go to lootcrate.com/driveanddish and get that monthly gamer subscription box sent right to your house. It's like a present in the mail every month. I love it.
You're listening to the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Kevin Rafees, Tim Tompkins, Justin Kuzar. Make sure you like us on Facebook at Drive and Dish NBA podcast. One of the other initial trades that went down surrounding the draft was Brooklyn pulling the trigger on a Thad Young deal, trading Thad Young to Indiana. They got number 20 back in return, so the Brooklyn finally moved into the draft. They got some assets, and with that draft pick, they ended up taking Caris LeVert.
A really interesting move. I felt like they sold a little bit low on Thad Young. You know, he's got 2 years plus a player option. With what the new cap is, it's a pretty team-friendly deal. I felt like they could have got a bit more, but I like the move. I mean, if you're looking at Brooklyn and you have no hopes of competing for by any stretch of the imagination.
Fun fact, in the chance of winning the finals next year, they were the bottom.
That's right. The Phoenix Suns were the only team or the first team above them.
Yes,
so yeah. The Vegas does not think highly of the Nets or the Suns. Sticking with Brooklyn, though, I felt like they could have gotten more than the 20th pick in a pretty lame draft.
For a guy who is averaging 15 points per game last year, 9 rebounds a game, played 73 games total, 33 minutes, like of effective field goal percentage of 51%.
Yeah, Thad Young's a good player. He's not a great player, but he's a good player.
No, he's a great power forward.
Right.
Like, he's
you can play him at you can play him at small forward,
right,
too.
Right, you can play him anywhere. But, like, so looking at it, he's only had two other seasons other than this season where he has averaged more than 15 points a game. Like, he's playing really good ball.
And he seemed to enjoy Brooklyn, too. And so if you're looking at Brooklyn right now, I think it's really smart that you get some draft picks, you get some young players, and you start to build something. Whether or not those players really stick or not, it doesn't matter. But you start to build something because you have to start building from somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And right now they have Brook Lopez, who is a fantastic center. You have to imagine they trade Brook Lopez at some point over the summer. Because what's the point of just having Brook Lopez?
So this is my question then, because earlier when we were talking about Ibaka, you're talking about how next year big men are kind of going to be sought after.
As far as rim protecting big men.
Okay, so either way, do you wait till next year and then maybe Lopez's value is higher because there will be more demand for those kind of players?
Pretty sure Brook Lopez is on a 2-year deal, so you basically have 1 year left. And I mean, you could re-sign him then if you feel comfortable re-signing him. Obviously, we all know the injury history of Brook Lopez.
Mm-hmm. His ankles and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But it just seems as a Nets organization that we're going to see Brook Lopez shipped off.
Well, it makes sense because, you know, you got to strip down value. It's such a tough minefield that you have to walk if you're the Brooklyn Nets GM Sean Marks, in the sense that, you know, you need to get back into the draft because at the end of the day, the only real young asset they've acquired in the past few years has been Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. And here you go out, you get number 20, you move on from Thad Young, a guy who realistically isn't going to be there when the Nets are good again. And you draft Caris LeVert. Do I think they probably could have got a little more for Thad Young? Yeah, I agree. But I understand getting into the draft. LeVert is an interesting pick. He's one of these guys. He had a lot of injuries his junior and senior year, but he's one of these Swiss Army knife type players that can do a lot of everything. He's pretty good from behind the arc. He's a good defensive guy. It's just you don't know if he's going to be healthy or not. So it's a bit of a gamble in terms of the pick itself. Granted, if it's healthy, I think he could be one of the bigger steals of the draft, but it's a major, major if right now. The problem is looking into next year. I know it's already, it's very premature, but the 2017 draft looks to be pretty good. It looks to be a lot better than it was this year, put it that way, in terms of just talent up and down the board. This year, you know, we mentioned a lot of talent at the top end, and by a lot of talent, I mean two, like, true superstar guys, and then it just drops a bit. There are guys that can be good role players and et cetera like that. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but 2017 is looking like it's going to have a lot more star power, and Boston has your pick swap. So the problem is you trade Thad Young, and for better or for worse, I mean, the Nets are going to be a worse basketball team this year than they were last year.
Wait, Boston has their pick swap again?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
God, they got fleeced in that trade.
Yeah.
So wait. Before we get too far past a point that you were talking about, is did not having any picks or anything like that hurt the Nets in the sense that everyone in the entire league knew they needed to get a pick, and that itself brought the value down on...
I'm sure, because there were reports out that the Jazz were shopping theirs, for example.
Right.
You look at the Kings, and why didn't the Kings go after this, too, if the Kings were just going to trade down anyway?
Right.
You know, it just seems like they could have at least gotten a top 15 pick out of Thad Young.
But before we get too off of it, a lot of people were praising the Clippers for trading down and getting two picks instead of one, which I guess is statistically obviously better to do because you have two players that may turn out when you're at lower end of the draft, I guess.
Right.
I don't know. I see this. This is almost like the opposite end for like the same talk with the Celtics almost having too much to the point that it may have hurt them, and we can get into that when we talk draft. But I think for the Nets, it was kind of almost backwards in the sense that they didn't have anything. Everyone in the league knew, and they said, okay, well, you know, you want one of our picks, and we want Young. And the Nets are saying, well, he's worth this. And they're like, yeah, but you need picks, so you're gonna
do it for less, right?
Yeah.
It just seems like there's probably some desperate teams out there. And by desperate, I mean, look at the Wizards. Look at the Jazz. Teams that really...
But the Wizards have Morris now.
I mean, even look at the Suns. I don't know what the Wizards really would have given up right there. Because they gave up their first-round pick already. But
and they're chasing Durant.
I don't hate... this I felt like it was a really good move by the Nets for once to do this. Again, beating a dead horse, I just felt like they could have got more.
Right. And I actually on the side of the Pacers themselves are kind of really exciting now.
Yeah, so I guess we'll move on to the Pacers. So in this really weird trade, Atlanta shipped off Jeff Teague to the Pacers. Really quick on Atlanta. Dennis Schroeder put out a tweet as soon as that happened saying he feels so honored that the coaches now have all this faith in him. And I was just thinking Atlanta might go out and draft a point guard, pick up a free agent point guard, buddy.
Wasn't it also to kind of clear room to try to get Al to come back? And,
right.
And so they can,
right.
So,
and Bazemore.
Yeah, Bazemore. And then with the pick that they were getting, the player they took was kind of like a 3-and-D guy. So it was kind of like their Carroll, to get another DeMar Carroll-esque player.
Yes.
So it was very obvious that they missed him. So kind of interesting. I do like what the Hawks did. I mean, it killed the whole, who are you going to sign, Teague or Schroeder?
Mm-hmm.
You know, which one are you going to... They killed that real fast, and they got it over with and just said, okay, they ripped the Band-Aid off.
What do you think about it for the Pacers?
I like it because you add another scorer behind, you know, Paul George.
Take some pressure off.
And Ellis, I guess we can throw him on that. You got another ball handler.
I'm worried about that backcourt, defensively, between Teague and Ellis. And Teague was injured last year, and that was part of the reason for his defensive lapse.
Mm-hmm.
And I do agree with you that it's a more dynamic backcourt. There's more scoring. I think the addition of Thad Young is going to make for a really fun Pacers team. But there's not a lot of shooting, and there's not a lot of defense in the backcourt. Now, they can switch Thad Young and guard some perimeter players. They can all obviously put Paul George to guard some perimeter players as
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like if you're the Pacers organization, your top priority should be trading Ellis this summer and for a wing player.
That's true. I do like, and to your point, talking about the shooting, Teague is coming in with a 40% three-point shot from last year, so that does help a little bit, although that's not saying taking away from Paul George. But I think it does help. I think you could definitely trade Ellis and get maybe a defensive player. Like, what if you went and got like a defensive player like Beverly or something to come and play?
Well, apparently Beverly's on the market.
I know. That's why it kind of popped into my head. I know Beverly, he doesn't have to handle the ball, so...
I just love this indie lineup. Like, I love this. I think Miles Turner can be poised to make the leap next year. I think you got PG now. You got Teague. I really like what this starting lineup can do moving forward. I think this was a really good trade for Indy. I think it was, you know, it was clear as day that Atlanta was going to move on. I think we all knew that. We knew that Schroeder was their guy. We saw moments of that in the playoffs. Like, we just saw the interest to bring Teague. They had to do something. Like, one of these guys had to be moved.
They were straight up benching Teague during some of the fourth quarters in the playoffs.
Yeah. So I think it was clear as day that it was going to move on. I think Teague is an upgrade for Indy over George Hill. And in an Eastern Conference that continues to be more and more competitive, I think the Pacers have bolstered themselves a little bit. I think you know, I don't want to get too hot takey now, but I think the Pacers can, you know, jump themselves into the top competition of the East next year. I really, really like this lineup on paper now. I think this is, and especially like you said, if you trade Ellis and you get any kind of value out of him, but even if you keep Ellis, I think you can make this work. I think Indy can really be successful last year. I mean, we saw them last year, and now, you know, no disrespect to George Hill, because we'll get into Utah in a bit. I think George Hill is going to be great for Utah as well, but I like what T can do for this team. I think this, you know, bumps Indy up another tier.
Just kind of sucks they don't have Vogel there to, you know, be their coach.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That is a shame. You got to wonder with Indy, too. They have Mahimi, who's going to be a free agent this year. It looks like Miles Turner's pretty much replaced him as far as the front court goes. Do they re-sign Jordan Hill? They pass up on Solomon's Hill player option, which still just absolutely boggles my mind. Solomon Hill was so good, and his player option was like $2 million.
Well, that's why it bothers. It's just more of the money than anything. It's
and he
just,
was good. No... He wasn't bad for them by any stretch.
No. I thought he was going to come back for sure.
I mean, declining a player option on a rookie deal.
Yeah.
it seems like bad money management.
Yeah. No. It is. It is bad money management. It doesn't seem like it. Let's just say it. It is bad money management.
Well, and I guess, not to cut you out, Kevin, I'm kind of looking at it, I guess we haven't touched the Jazz aspect of this trade.
Oh, I think it's great for the Jazz. I do and I don't. No, see, I'm really excited. I think George Hill, we were not George Hill fans on this podcast 2 years ago, and I thought he really bounced back last year. He put in a lot of good minutes for this Pacers team. I mean, what's been Utah's problem that we've been talking about for just the last few months? It's been that Utah hasn't had a solid option of point guard. I think George Hill gives you a legitimate point guard, starting point guard, who can go out there night in, night out, give
defensive
the Jazz
too.
The minutes they need, a defensive-oriented guy, which I think helps. I mean, and you look at that, and you look at the fact that you're going to get Dante Exum back this year. Granted, Exum is still a huge wild card. I still really don't know what Dante Exum is 2 years after he's been drafted, but regardless, you get him back in the fold next year. We know the Utah seems to be pretty low on Trey Burke, so it doesn't seem like they're going to put too much more into that. We know Alec Burks has just had all those injury problems, but with Hill and Exum, I'm feeling a lot better about the Utah point guard situation than I was last year. And if you look at yourself with Utah, you know, what has really been stopping them from taking the leap and getting into the playoffs? It's been that point guard. And we know Utah is such a defensive-oriented team with Gobert in the middle and with Derek Favors and some of these other guys. And I just think this is the push that Utah needs. I'm hoping it's not a false flag, because I really thought Utah was going to be make the jump last year. But I think this is what Utah needs, a solid, certified NBA point guard that I think can get them back into the playoffs.
My only problem is, does he fit their timeline? You know, he's almost 30. He's 29.
Derek Favors is a bit older, too.
Yeah.
I think when you're looking at the Jazz, or I guess you could say with any team, most teams aren't as fortunate to be like the Oklahoma City Thunder, where everyone's right around the same age.
Right.
And them as a franchise, they aren't going to be able to attract free agents unless they start getting into the playoffs.
I guess my only worry is, why didn't, and maybe there's you know, the whole trade worked out through that, but why didn't they get Teague? Like, I get it that they wanted to keep a defensive-minded thing. George Hill only averaging about 12 points per game. I thought the Jazz would favor so much more with a point guard that's got, like, just scoring potential, like, or can drop 15, 20 points a game like Teague. Like, it just made more sense in my mind to stay away from the defensive side when they were already the eighth best in the league. Like, I don't think defense is your worry, and I get George Hill like just adds to that, and that's going to be awesome. Willing to bet they'll be in the top of the league for defense. I still think scoring is going to be a problem for this team.
Well, I think it will. I mean, George Hill's not exactly a dynamic offensive guy. I mean, I still think the hope in Utah
is
that
he's a spot-up shooter.
Well, and I still think in the hope in Utah is that Exum is your franchise point guard. But until you see that, and until you're 100% sure about that, and you know exactly what Dante Exum is, I don't think it hurts to have a placeholder. You know, it's one of those situations where Utah, that core needs playoff experience. I mean, that's the one thing. They play together plenty of times. Like, they got to get to the playoffs and start to grow and see what it's like on the next level. Like, I do think it'll benefit the franchise. I don't think you're giving enough up for George Hill to be worried about the timeline, I guess, in this case.
And I mean, if you look at how the Jazz runs their offense, it's a lot of dribble handoff off the elbow with their bigs and Derek Favors and Trevor Booker, and it takes some pressure off of Gordon Hayward.
Do you think he moves?
I don't. There were a lot of draft day trade rumors
with him
around Hayward,
and the Suns for a while there,
and the Suns too. But I mean, there was a lot of rumors that Hayward wasn't happy in Utah. If that's the case, and Utah decided not to trade him, I wonder if that was a mistake.
Yeah.
He's going to be a free agent, and if he's vocally saying, "I'm not happy here," do you go out and you make a trade,
get something,
or
for him?
Do you prove it to him to stay by making a trade that gets you into the playoffs? Or was it all smoke and mirrors, and were the Celtics just trying to improve that the value of that number three pick by saying, look, we could get Gordon Hayward with this?
My other thing, I guess, here is in terms of Hayward's happiness level, I never felt like Hayward was good being the number one option.
He's the number two guy for sure.
Right, so but by bringing in Hill, he's still going to be probably the number one option for scoring, keeping him unhappy.
But at least he doesn't have to have the ball in his hand, though. Like, he doesn't have to do all the playmaking.
He can play off the ball.
I think nobody minds scoring.
Right.
They probably just get tired of having to be the sole playmaker all the time when they aren't the point guard.
I like it because Jazz are one of my favorite teams to watch, and they're interesting, and I really want them to make the playoffs.
Well, look how much better they were once they added Shelvin Mack. I mean, it was like it was night and day. It wasn't enough at the end of the season,
but they were only like a game or two out.
Yeah, they lost some games they shouldn't have lost. They ended up not making the playoffs, but they were so much better when they added Shelvin Mack. I mean, it was like night and day. And if Shelvin Mack can do that to their offense and to their team, I just think George Hill is going to be really
amazing.
Good. You know, I mean, he shoots like 40% from three.
It's a good move for the Jazz. I think Indian. Both Utah have benefited from this. I guess I want to go back to Atlanta before we close out. What do we think of it? What do we think Atlanta is doing here? Because there have been other teams linked to Horford. We know Al Horford's a free agent this year. Millsap on a deal, but getting a little bit older. It's clear that they've turned the keys of the offense over to Schroeder. I guess, is this a full rebuild for Atlanta? Do you think it's a gradual rebuild for Atlanta?
Budenholzer,
what are they trying to do?
Budenholzer has no patience for rebuilding, and I think that we've been able to see that. I don't think that that's the case for Atlanta.
I don't know why because you were talking about Budenholzer made me think of the Spurs, and I know this went really under the radar, and it's just something, a hot take that I've been thinking. The Spurs went and picked up Danny Archuleta from Villanova. Great point guard, not really athletically there, just really good basketball IQ. And in my mind, I'm like, that's such a Spurs thing to do. It's so under the radar.
Dude, the Spurs,
it's going to be amazing.
He's immediately going to be like an instant 3-and-D guy just because the Spurs pick him
up.
Like, he'll immediately become some productive player.
But nobody's really...
It's like there are certain things in life that I've learned at this point. I'm currently 25 years old. I'm almost 26 years old. And I know no matter who the Spurs pick up, they're probably going to end up being way better than they would be on any
other
team.
It's like one of those things where they did... The Spurs did draft another a point guard way higher in the draft. I was just sitting there, I was like, that's such a Spurs thing, and I get it. And I can't wait for like 3 or 4 years down the line when it's like, who is this kid? Where did he come from?
Yeah, not to be kind of random here, but you guys heard LeBron's comments, right, about the Spurs first, because the Spurs first round pick, Dejounte Murray, he was a guard from Washington. He really slipped down the board. He was expected to go mid-teens. He ended up going 29 to San Antonio, and he's with LeBron's sports agency, and LeBron, I think, either tweeted him or texted him or something like that and said, oh, don't worry about it, kid. Like, prove them all wrong, and you're going to play for the best organization in the NBA. And it's just, I think that's so accurate at this point, at least in recent years.
We didn't really plan on getting on the Spurs, but for the talk, I think that shows that, you know, you need to start figuring out what you're going to do to help Tony Parker.
Well,
because he's getting old.
Well,
Ginobili opted out of his contract. We'll see whether or not he re-signs.
And I look at that pick, and like, for one, I do think Murray slipped a little bit too far. He was higher on my board, and I'm just like, of course he ends up going to the Spurs. Like, really? This guy, the guy who slips and probably should have gone higher, of course he goes to the Spurs. I just, that's a run that I'm not going to believe dies until I actually see it.
I mean, they're set up for a long time. Between LaMarcus Aldridge and Kawhi Leonard, the Spurs are, they're set up for a really long time. And I wondered, there were some rumors that Kobe Bryant was going to be working with Kawhi Leonard over the summer.
For his offense.
That's terrifying.
Kawhi's one of my favorite players, and I'm just so excited.
That's terrifying. So I mean, if he gets we've already seen flashes of what he does on the offensive end and how he took over games last year and really became the guys for the Spurs. But if that offense becomes consistent, like,
I'm just worried that 96 Tahoe won't make the drive to Kobe's place.
You guys saw the comments by Danny Green. I can't remember what paper he was talking to. It was a San Antonio paper where he was saying the problem with the Spurs this last year was a lack of chemistry on the court.
Really?
It could be. He was blasted for it, too.
I mean, I don't think it's tough. We mentioned the Spurs did something that they don't do usually, and that's they went out and they got a free agent, and that a big-time marquee free agent. They signed the guy of last year's free agency class, LaMarcus Aldridge, and I think that it's just different. It was a different type of Spurs team that we saw last year, and granted, they still, you know, this is a team that won the fourth most games in NBA history. And, you know, I also think with the Spurs, it was just a really bad matchup against the Thunder. Like, the Spurs have never really matched up with the Thunder that well.
The Thunder kind of have their number, don't they?
Yeah. When the Thunder have been healthy, they've, even going back to when the Thunder made the finals a few years ago, I mean, they were the ones that were beating the Spurs. Like, the Thunder just have that. The Thunder have all those athletic arms. You know, San Antonio's never really been a heavily athletic team. They're more like the Warriors in that aspect, where it's so much on ball
team
movement,
ball.
It's so much on team ball, it's so much on, you know, just getting guys the looks they need. Where with OKC, they overwhelm you with their just incredible athleticism, and these guys with, you know, these massive wingspans, and they close the floor spacing down.
Well, and also, at least on the side of Danny Green's comments, I'm sure the last thing you want if you're a Spurs GM when you're meeting with Kevin Durant is one of your players going to the media and saying, "We don't have chemistry."
Right.
Great, thank you. Now we got to go meet with Kevin Durant and explain to him
if Kevin Durant came into San Antonio and was like, "I'm worried about team chemistry," I would just bring Tim Duncan out, like riding on an eagle with all five championship trophies stretched out in his arms.
That being said, and on the last episode, we talked about Kevin Durant a little bit. And what we didn't mention is Kevin Durant has scheduled meetings with the Celtics, the Clippers, the Heat, the Warriors, the Spurs, and the Thunder, obviously. Mm-hmm. And those are his scheduled free agency meetings. You're looking at that, and with everything that happened with the Warriors before we move on to the NBA draft, do you think that the Warriors losing increase the chance that they'll get Kevin Durant? Because I kind of do.
I just don't want him to. I don't, like, the last place I want him to go is the Warriors.
Why is it you don't want
LeBron James-esque going to the best team thing? It's not even that. It's the Warriors, when they won, everyone was on their wagon. We loved them. They were the exciting team. This year, they kind of got the, all right, you guys are getting annoying and cocky, and if you win again, I'm probably really going to be against you for the third, you know, for the next, when you're going for the three-peat.
Mm-hmm.
And while they didn't win, I almost already feel like that. And if Kevin Durant goes there, I'm just going to be so annoyed and be like, I hate the fact that you guys have this potential now. And that's not me hating against the Warriors. I won't like it.
Well, did you see the comments, not to cut you off, Kevin, I'm sorry. I don't want to forget about this though. The comments by the Warriors GM saying that they're just always thinking about the next thing and they're always light years ahead of everybody else.
Yeah.
And so that kind of goes out the comment you were just saying, where even their management
is getting cocky.
Is really, really cocky. And they should be. They've done a lot of things right, but there is a certain disdain for egocentric personalities and narcissism.
Well,
isn't there?
Well, Joe Lacob got killed for that piece in the New York Times, and rightfully so. I mean, that was the most self-serving, ego-funded, just like, oh, we are light years ahead of everyone else, right? And blah, 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 blah. It's like, dog, your franchise is light years ahead of everyone else, and you just blew a 3-1 lead in the finals. Like, the Warriors need, and I love the Warriors, man. That's the thing, is I feel like a lot of people, like, we have a review next week that we're going to read that kind of, like, mentioned my comments on the Cavs, and it's like, yo, I love the Warriors. Like, the Warriors are so much fun to watch. Like, there was no one last year who had more fun with that Warriors run and thought they deserved to win a title and thinks they're going to be right back at it again. Like, the Warriors needed to just eat a little bit of slice of humble pie. It's good for everyone once in a while. You know, look at LeBron James ate the same thing when they lost in 2011. Like, you just, it happens. And the reason that I was rooting for Cleveland was not because I liked the Cavaliers. It's for the fans. It's been since 1964. Like, give them a break. San Francisco, between the Warriors winning last year and between the Giants being successful recently, they've won 3 World Series. Like, the 49ers were in the Super Bowl. The San Jose Sharks were in the Stanley Cup this year. Like, granted, the Niners and the Sharks both lost, but it's like, yo, relax, guys. Like, let Cleveland get some love. Cleveland's gotten a lot over these past few years. Those fans deserved it.
I would love to see every year a different franchise win the finals.
Of course. You know, if the Sixers ever get to that point, I'm going to be rooting for the Sixers to win every single championship with no remorse on the other league. But yeah, I mean, you get these dedicated fans, and everybody should have that joy. You know, I don't know what it's like to win an NBA finals, but I've seen a World Series win in my life, and I know how awesome that was. Like, just how much fun everything was those days after they won the World Series. You know, I look at the Cleveland parade. They had 1.3 million people show up. Speaking that entire of- region showed out, and I know what you're going to bring up, but we'll talk about that in a second, because
what, the
I
person that got so shot many... or the, no, the guy no. that ate horse shit?
The guy that ate horse crap.
Just
like,
why?
Ew.
Why? I have if so you, many if questions.
You, if you're listening and you don't and haven't seen the video, we retweeted it on our Twitter, so you can see it there. It's just, why? And like, the girl is like straight up scary movie screaming.
Everyone was kind of scared of him too. You saw like everyone backing off when he picked up the horse poop and put it in his mouth. Everyone like, and he was a big dude.
He was a terrifying
dude. Yeah,
though,
he was. You heard somebody got shot at the end of the parade too, right?
No.
So it sort of, you know, just like ended in tragedy.
Yeah, it was a really
teen girl too.
Well, it was such a great day for the city. I feel like they really, really showed out. J.R. Smith still didn't have a shirt on, which is just amazing.
Is he ever gonna? Oh, and then Kyrie Irving. So he posted
on that yacht,
a yacht, and all of a sudden everyone's killing him because there were no black girls on the yacht. It was all white girls, which is fine, but everyone's really killing him.
Look, let Kyrie Irving breathe, man. He just won the NBA championship.
There were some good looking girls on that boat.
Well, did you see the Barstool write up? They're like, Kyrie's walking around the boat like, hi, this is Becky, and this is Becky.
Well, yo, Kyrie Irving, too. Can we talk about how they showed the footage of him on the float with J.R. Smith, and they casually just snuck a bottle of rosé into the parade, and he's swinging from the champagne bottles. They're going downtown.
Well, you saw Ty Lue sitting there, like, dancing. You would never see Greg Popovich doing that.
No,
Pop was dancing at the one parade. You've never seen the footage of that? They had Pop doing the most awkward dance.
I meant dancing like Ty Lue.
Oh, no.
Tyler looked like he had some game.
Well, thank you, everyone, for listening to part one of this episode. Like we told you guys earlier in the intro of this episode, that this was going to be a two-part episode, so we hope you guys enjoyed our trade breakdowns coming later this week. We're going to have all our reaction to the draft, so stay tuned for that.
And if you want to support the show and you want to support the sponsors, a great way to do so is by going to driveanddishpodcast.com and then clicking on the sponsors tab, top right-hand corner of the page. You can check out Loot Crate. You can check out Daily NBA Highlights. Supporting the sponsors supports the show. And I mean, they're good sponsors.
And if you want to follow us on anything, social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, you can find us on our driveanddishpodcast.com page or just search Drive and Dish Podcast on the social media site.
I think we've done enough dancing for today, so why don't we dance Wednesday?
See you, Star Side.
Okay, well, I'm out of here.
Pigeon in the hole.
Da 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 da. Hey. Da 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 da.
Hey. Let's go while we're young.
All right. I think they get the point.